Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. I'm the host, Jason Middleton. This week, we're revisiting an occasional story thread here on the show, workplace inequality. In the past, we've looked at the wage gap that women face, the lack of access to upper-level jobs and promotions for women, and even ageism, a topic that every worker will face at some point. We have the author of a new book this week. It's titled Fearless and Free: How Smart Women Pivot and Relaunch Their Careers. Wendy Sachs started her career on Capitol Hill as a press secretary, moved into TV news, working at Dateline, CNN, and Fox. Then she switched gears into PR. She's also worked at several startups, and she's been laid off a time or two. Suffice to say, the woman has pivot experience. I had one more question for Wendy Sachs about workplace solutions, not just the problems. So let's get back to our chat with her. Let's sail into the solution seas for a second, because you've got a whole book here. It's called, of course, Fearless and Free: How Smart Women Pivot and Relaunch Their Careers. We're speaking with Wendy Sachs, the author of said book. And a lot of reportage went into this. You talked to a lot of people. You talked to a lot of women who have done this successfully. What are some things we can pull out before we read the entire book?
So one of the things that I really do love, and again, this comes from one of these themes of Silicon Valley, is engineering your own serendipity. So that's creating your own good fortune. And how do you make that happen, right? I mean, so what are these things you can do? It's not going to happen without putting in the work. So it's about laying the groundwork, you know, doing some of that legwork beforehand. And then when you are going to a conference, or you're going to a cocktail party, or you're going to a meetup, you know who's going to be there, you know what your ask is going to be, you know what you have done and what you're looking to do. So it starts with having some sort of vision, having some sort of sense of, and I know what I'm giving you, like really general sort of vague sort of ideas. I talk about specific stories in the book, and right. I can walk you through that. But it's really about having almost the vision and the foresight. This is what I'm looking for. This is what I want to get out of this. And I'm going to make a connection with X woman or X man in the room, and I'm going to tell them this is what I'm doing. And I'm going to have a little bit of an end game coming out of this. So then, of course, doors open doors, and, you know, you have these sort of infinite amount of boundaries that can keep you, like, opening into the next, you know, room. But you've created something for yourself. So you're not just sort of hoping something fabulous is going to happen for you. You're going to go to a specific event thinking, this is who I'm going to connect with. This is my goal for the night. I'm going to follow up with this person and maybe offer them something. You know, that whole, like, reciprocity. It's the, you know, I'm asking you for something, but this is how I can help you. This is how I can connect you to someone else who you might be thinking that would be an important connection for that person. So it's about creating these opportunities and growing your networks. I mean, the networking, as I mean, such a valley sort of cliche, but that really is everything. And bringing it back to women, on a practical level, so many women don't allow themselves to network as often or as efficiently as they should. And for very practical reasons, we have kids at home. You know, many of us have children. And when you have small children at home, maybe you don't want to go to that cocktail party after work because you want to get home to put your kids to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not really practical. So as I was writing this book, I was really forcing myself to almost participate in all of the lessons that I was describing. And I forced myself to go out more. And the more I did it, the better I became at it, and the more comfortable I became at it. And my network actually grew, and I was not as squeamish about asking for things. Right. So it's sort of an interesting process. And the more you do something, the more comfortable you're going to get in doing it.
Well, that was a high-level view from the author of Fearless and Free with Wendy Sachs. Wendy, my format is a little tight, so I'd love to keep you longer, but let's just have you on again down the road. Is that okay?
That would be fantastic. I'd love that.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That was Wendy Sachs, author of Fearless and Free: How Smart Women Pivot and Relaunch Their Careers. We have a link to Wendy's book at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. And while you're there, you can check out our weekly playlist of the music we use on each show. Here's a quick sample before we move into our next topic, a topic you will want to stay awake for. Let's talk about a twice-yearly debacle where the government, or something, disrupts our actual clocks, if not our biological ones, though that last point is debatable. It's daylight savings time, that time when we spring forward. and rob ourselves of one entire hour of our weekends just so we can get up on Monday morning earlier than usual, more dependent on caffeine than usual, and most likely grumpier than usual as well. So, do bleary-eyed workers put their best foot forward at work? Yeah, not on your life. Here's a workplace expert who has quantified what we already thought. Springing forward can suck.
Irenio Mendoza, regional manager for Robert Half.
Well, I'll be honest. I work tired a lot because I get up a little bit before 4 o'clock in the morning to get to work. And not everybody does that. I totally understand. But there's one thing that's coming up that really kind of like, let's just say it's a high barrier to entry. I hate when we have to spring forward. And I'm wondering, am I the only one affected by this? Because now I got to get up at 3 o'clock as far as my body thinks. What do you think?
You are not alone. We just did a recent survey and basically asked, are you tired on the job? And what we saw was overwhelming 74% of the people we talked to said they were definitely tired going into work. So you're not alone.
Irenio, thank you for mentioning the data you have, because there are a couple of numbers that really pop out. 86% of millennials say they are tired at work. Does that make sense to you?
You know, it does. Specifically in the Bay Area, Jason, it's so competitive. There's so much talent here that it's almost the norm that you need to keep up. You need to be top of class, if you will. And not only that, this day and age, everything is basically electronic. So even if you get home early or you get home at a decent time, you're probably going to log on to your tablet. You're probably going to check your cell phone for emails and extra work. So I don't think it's a surprise, because, you know, obviously you've got your family, you've got your work, very important. And, you know, sometimes work will be top priority. And again, even if you're home, sometimes your boss may expect you to respond to emails, get that project delivered at a certain time.
I'm guilty of doing that, actually. Having run teams in the past, like a small army of freelance writers and other contributors to different websites, I have had that expectation. And I've had to dial it back because I just don't think it's necessarily fair. And you're right. It can make just people perpetually tired. And that must mean you don't get their top production.
You're absolutely right. And I would say, if you're a baseball fan and you think about the starting pitchers, even your best pitcher, you could throw them out there every day, but they need to rest for 5 days before they even go out and pitch. So if you think about that analogy, you want to do the same for work in an office. You've got very productive employees, but if you burn them out, they're not going to be very productive. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to miss deadlines. And sometimes they may even have attitude changes, and they may ultimately leave. So watching out for that as a manager, making sure you monitor that and give them the time, give them the extra help that they may need to make sure that in the long run, it's actually a really good work-life balance and you're getting more valuable productivity in the long run.
Okay, so I've written down on my post-it note, don't burn out my team. I've put it on my monitor. What other tips do you have for managers?
The biggest tip I can tell you is, as the manager, everyone is looking at you to set the example. So if you're the person who's there till 9 p.m. every night, the old-fashioned mentality is, I don't leave until my boss leaves. It's probably going to be somehow correlated to that. What you could do is, you know, you may need to stay there, but if you've got other people that you think, okay, you know, they're already working hard, I don't want to burn them out, have that conversation and say, you need to leave at 5, at 6, or whatever time they need to get off. It's okay. You know, I may need to stay here later, but I'm the manager. And I think just having that conversation with the team or the individual will really help. And same goes for coming home. And if you see them on the phone, on their tablets, responding to emails or doing extra work, I mean, maybe it's not frowned upon, but again, always monitor to see, is this too much? Are they going to be an at-risk employee? I want them to work happy. I want them to enjoy their jobs and also their family life, social life. So I think just that communication and having a really, really specific conversation about expectations will save you a lot of time and energy down the line.
Irenio, about 20 years ago when Google built its complex, the Googleplex down in Mountain View, they included nap rooms or nap pods, actually. And I'm wondering, was that just an eccentricity or a headline back in the day? Or is that something that companies might actually want to look at?
They still do it. You know, Jason, that's a double-edged sword. So there's two ways to look at that. The first way, which is kind of what you're alluding to, is, hey, you got a company. If you want to take a nap, feel free. Come in here. We have a whole nap room. It's relaxed. It's quiet. The other way you can look at it is, okay, is that just here? And then I'll never be able to go home because now I can't take a break because they're going to say, well, you don't need to go to lunch. We have a cafeteria. You don't need to go sleep in your car or do an errand because now right. we have a nap room. So it really just depends on how you view it. I've heard it both ways. Google's not alone. So maybe to answer your question, a lot of other companies have some sort of nap room. The way you look at it can go two very different ways.
Well, there's one at my gym I noticed the other day. I was done working out, and I went up, and I took my shower and everything, and then I had never noticed it before, but somebody was coming out like literally wiping their eyes coming out of a nap. So, well, Irenio, thank you so much for your time today, and let's all just try to get a little extra rest this weekend.
I agree. Thank you, Jason.
That was Irenio Mendoza. He's a vice president at Robert Half. Robert Half is a talent placement agency. They also run a division called Account Temps. There's a link to it at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. Coming up after the break, we are going to get techie, but in an opaque way, and that's okay. How about voice-activated window tinting? Smart glass technology. It's not just for those big commercial campuses. We talk about a company that's expanding into residential spaces as they expand their production methods with none other than Apple partner Foxconn. That's next. This is Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton, and please come on back.